I think I'm about to be famous. Oh, my God. I'm having a hard time. Famous with the wrong people, of course. Famous with the right-wing screwballs and nutcases and sick bastards in this country. But this freakish organization, the Media Research Center, that is run by Brent Bozo, has come out with a special report. It was released today, and their public relations department sent me a copy of the press release. Here it is. You ready? In a special report released today, the Media Research Center reveals the vile and vicious members of left-wing talk radio and their record of hate-mongering. While the media continue to ignore these accounts, they contrastingly continue to accuse and attack conservatives. Yeah, like we did to Dr. Laura, right? The real radio hate-mongers, that's the title of it, reveals research dating back as far as 2007 of slander against conservatives on liberal talk radio that has gone largely unchecked and even ignored by the media. Hosts such as Mike Malloy and Ed Schultz are among the group of true hate mongers who have typified slander against conservative radio talk show hosts, Republican members of Congress, and the GOP as a whole. God damn them! No, I just put that in. Yet the media continue to demonize conservative rhetoric, all the while failing to address or even discuss the arguably worst offenders on the left. Oh, my God. Ah! Findings in the real radio hate mongers of this hateful rhetoric include... there's three quotes here. Two are from me. One of them says, "Do you not understand that Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly are as complicit in the September 11, 2001 terror attack as any one of the dumbass 14 who came from Saudi Arabia?" Oh, I'm a hate monger. Oh, report me. And then this one. "Dick Cheney, by the way, looks very ruddy. I couldn't get over that. Like he must have feasted on a Jewish baby or a Muslim baby. He must have sent his people out to get one and bring it back so he could drink his blood." That's hate radio. See, that's not a satire or parody. It's hate radio. You bet your ass it is, Brent Bozo. Brent Bozo, founder and president of the Media Research Center, commented, quote, "It's bad enough that the liberal media continue to attack conservative top talkers with baseless lies and concocted smears, but now we have proof that the real hate is being spread by liberal talk show hosts with no repercussions from the media. Wishing for the death of Michelle Bachmann and Rush Limbaugh goes ignored by the so-called news media. Accusing conservatives of wishing to kill President Obama goes ignored as well. Look, we have the proof. We have their words on record. The media must tell the truth about these vile offenders, else they participate in outright hypocrisy."
Click here to view the full report.
Now, if you want to view the full report, we'll put this up at our website, but it's I don't know, what is their website? We'll put it up in a minute. This is great fun. It talks about Dial Global's Ed Schultz and Stephanie Miller, Premier Radio Network's Randy Rhodes, former Air America talkers Montel Williams and Ron Reagan Jr., and the now independently syndicated Mike Malloy, who seems to be credited with the most quotes included in the MRC report. The new study by the conservative group comes just days after Media Matters launched a campaign to target advertisers of talk radio network syndicated host Dr. Laura Schlesinger over racially controversial comments she recently made on her show. Yeah, but yeah, but yeah, but yeah. So I'd like to ask on the air, in the tradition of fellow hater Dr. Laura, can I now say, oh, hell, I'm going to say it. Cracker! Cracker, cracker, cracker! Your old lady's a cracker! Your old man's a cracker! Your kids are crackers! Your mama's a cracker! Your daddy's a cracker, cracker, cracker. Your dog's a damn cracker. Cracker, cracker, cracker. Oh, boy, I feel better. Yes?
I just find it incredibly ironic. I wonder if anybody else will, that on the one hand, it seems like peanut butter and crackers, that the right-wing media in this country, which is most of them, seem to take great pleasure in going, Malloy, who? Who's Mike Malloy? Well, he's that little guy over there. He's that guy on those 9 radio stations.
Yeah, he's got six listeners.
But then when it comes to writing the report, if you go look at this report, there'll be 40 quotes, and 38 of them are from you. So right. All of a sudden, you're the manifestation.
I'm the evil
bastard. You're the face of left-wing media. You are the liberal media spokesman. Tom Hartman.
Right.
Not Bill Press.
I don't think they even mention Hartman. I don't think they mention Press.
No.
But it's not Randy Rhodes.
It's you.
It's not Ed Schultz. It's not Montel Williams. It's not Ron Reagan Jr. They must choke on that when they
It's not Olbermann. It's not Rachel.
They must choke on it when they have to list Ron Reagan Jr. Well, I love it. We'll put a link up so you can go read it. And as much as I read, they have it exactly right. Exactly right. Not only do you get to read the transcript, but they've also put up MP3 audios. I love it. Thank you, boys! Thank you, Mr. Bozo! Brent Bozo at the Media Research Committee or Council or Coalition. Thank you. I do hate radio. Yeah, I attack people that are defenseless. I sure do. I attack Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Beck and Bachman and Malkin and O'Reilly. Yeah, I'm just a son of a bitch. I really attack people who are just defenseless. Everything I say on this program is true, except for the parody. Everything I say on this program is true. Dick Cheney does drink the blood of Islamic and Jewish babies. He does. He does. Trust me. All right. Coming up after this break, we have some news reports from the violence being perpetrated by Glenn Beck listeners. There's going to be a lot more of it. When does he desecrate Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech? Is that Saturday? Yeah, I think it is. He wouldn't do it on Sunday because that's God's day. Of course, it's not. But, you know, Beck is such a psychopath. This guy really is going mad. I can't wait for the day when he does pull out his ritual knife and anyway, coming up tonight, we have a couple of reports here on people who have been pushed over the edge by Beck and how they responded. Also, later on this evening, where did the Tea Party really come from? We've talked about the Koch brothers a couple of times. And I guess we'll plan this for the third hour tonight. We're going to be talking about the Koch brothers, David Koch and his brother Charles, real Nazis. And also, we will have, Alan Simpson. Alan Simpson refers to Social Security. Now, if you don't like the T word where it concerns the female anatomy, don't listen. Alan Simpson says that Social Security is, quote, a milk cow with 310 million tits, end quote. Now, keep in mind that Alan Simpson, the Republican and former senator from Wyoming, is also one of the two people appointed to as chair people by Barack Obama to reform Social Security. We'll be right back. right. Moving right along here. Again, Kathy will post Brent Bozo's report. Oh, it's already up? Okay. You can go to MikeMoloy.com and enjoy. Oh, God. As BJ writes, and you caused all that trouble with a 25-cent program? And the other side spends hundreds of millions? Yeah, I'm a bargain. You know, I've been telling you people that for a long time. 25-cent program is a bargain. Oh, yeah. This weekend, Glenn Beck, who is certifiably insane and a threat to everything that this country ever aspired to be. I guess we don't aspire to be those things anymore. It seems like every day more and more people have just said to hell with it and have given up. And into that vacuum that's then created steps these psychopaths like the teabaggers and vermin like Beck and Hannity and the rest of these people. But there will be violence. There will be violence at Beck's desecration of Martin Luther King's Poor People's March this weekend in Washington, D.C. There will be violence. And the reason I say that is because that's what Beck wants. And whatever Glenn Beck wants, you see, Mr. and Mrs. America, he gets. Glenn Beck is fancies himself as the new Jesus. First it was Reverend Sun Myung Moon, and he wound up owning a newspaper, and now it's this freak. So whatever Glenn Beck wants, he works in mysterious ways, his wonders to reveal or his wonders to cause. Beck will prompt his audience in just the right way so that any hapless person who goes by who's not a teabag freak runs the risk of being shot or knifed or spat upon or kicked or stomped or killed. And that's precisely one of those scenarios is going to play out. We'll talk about it Monday because it will happen this weekend. Let me see. Beck's audacity in doing this, and he claims that God led him to pick August 28th, that he didn't have anything to do with it. That he had originally planned sometime in September, but somehow God spoke to him. This guy is really going over the edge, and it's great fun. I love to see it, except for the violence that he is causing and the pain and the suffering of people that are being shot down, knived, ripped to pieces because of Glenn Beck's hate rhetoric. And this Brent Bozo talks about what we... Oh, Mike Molloy is a hater! Let me tell you something, Brent, you're goddamn right I am to people like you and your filthy, filthy cadre of people who want to destroy this country. As a matter of fact, I'm proud of it. So you keep those reports going. But this is not about me. This is about Beck. So here's a couple more examples. Let's see. This is updated about 5 o'clock this afternoon. The man charged with the anti-Muslim slashing and stabbing of a cab driver was arraigned today in Manhattan Criminal Court this afternoon on charges of second-degree attempted murder as a hate crime, first-degree assault as a hate crime, and fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon. An emergency medical technician said that had the cut been any deeper or longer, the cab driver would have died. S. Simpson ordered the man, Michael Enright, 21, held without bail. The assistant district attorney said in court that Enright, the 21-year-old Beck follower and incipient killer, Enright hailed a taxi near the intersection of 24th Street and 2nd Avenue on Tuesday evening. Last night, Mr. Enright asked the taxi driver, who was from Bangladesh, if he was Muslim, according to the district attorney. After the driver said he was, Enright responded with the Arabic greeting, Assalamu alaikum, according to the criminal court complaint. Then Mr. Enright said, consider this a checkpoint. Then he pulled out a Leatherman utility knife and started slashing the taxi driver's throat. The driver turned and Enright slashed him in his face and forearms, according to the prosecutor. The driver locked all four doors and drove to 42nd Street, the prosecutor said, but Mr. Enright somehow got out of the car on the way. The driver flagged down a police officer standing on a corner and the officer apprehended Enright. Enright sliced According to the prosecutor, Enright sliced the driver's neck open halfway across his throat. The prosecutor said this is a highly vicious attack on an innocent person based on his religion. If convicted, Enright faces up to 25 years in prison. Jason Martin, Mr. Enright's lawyer, said his client lived with his parents and was an honor student at a school for visual arts where he is a senior. We'll finish this up. And then there's another one. We'll finish this up in a second. These are the results of real hate radio, which is what Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Michelle Malkin, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of these right-wing sons of bitches do every single day, 24/7, across the fruited plain, coast to coast, border to border. And the lights come up on the black town. It's about 25 before the hour. So back to this report from the New York Times blog, City Room. It's all over media, but this is where I happen to get it. Karen Zrake and Andy Newman write this. So this guy, Michael Enright, 21, asks a dark-skinned cab driver, after saying, "Assalamu alaikum, are you a Muslim?" And the cab driver answered yes. And the punk, the 21-year-old Beck follower, well, let me say that the New York Times blog City Room does not mention Glenn Beck. I mention Glenn Beck, okay? Because I know how, I don't think these two writers for the City Room blog understand the poison that these right-wing talkers are pumping into the body of this country. And I'm glad they don't. That way they can write with clear heads about stuff. But anyway, after asking the dark-skinned man if he were an Arab, or I'm sorry, Muslim, and the answer, the taxi driver answered yes, he's from Bangladesh, the punk said, "Consider this a checkpoint," and started slashing the man with a Leatherman utility knife, slashing the driver's throat, his arms, his legs, throat, his face, his forearms, as, you know, the man tried to defend himself. Now, as a lawyer, Jason Martin said young Master Enright lived with his parents and is an honor student at a school for visual arts where he's a senior. Oh, well, he's an honor student. And what do you want to bet? I bet he was abused by his uncle when he was a child, right? Ah, that's what the defense is going to be, of course. Young Master Enright is a volunteer with Intersections International, according to the lawyer. That's a nonprofit that works to promote cross-cultural understanding. And Young Master Enright has spoken out in favor of the proposed Islamic Cultural Center near Ground Zero. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, must be a case of mistaken identity, right? No, this is a Beck listener. An otherwise probably decent kid, but this poisonous son of a bitch Glenn Beck gets inside his head and convinces him to go slash a dark-skinned man. This is what Beck is all about, right? Okay. Young Master Enright, who, according to the writers here, shuffled into court with a collared T-shirt, cargo shorts, and shackles around his ankles, has also worked with veterans with PTSD, his attorney claims. Oh, this guy is an absolute saint. My goodness. Well, I wonder what happened. The lawyer said, he's terrified. He's shocked at the allegations. He's just trying to cope with it right now. Oh, it wasn't my client. It was his evil twin. It was a Dybbuk. It was something that jumped into the cab that looked like my client. It wasn't my client. Oh, my God, no. Young Master Enright's father was in court for the arraignment and declined to comment. Was not my son! It was an evil banshee, a ghost, a Dybbuk. What's another? What am I looking for? Incubus, succubus. Huh? I ain't. Wait a second. I have to pause the show for a second. Just for a minute, because I want to make sure I earn my title that Brent Bozo has given me as the most hate-filled liberal talker in America. Okay? Cracker! Cracker, 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 cracker! You're a cracker! Your mama's a cracker! Your daddy's a cracker! Your auntie's a cracker! Your grandmammy's a cracker! You're all crackers! Cracker, 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 cracker! Cracker! Okay, back to the program. Well, I've heard people on the Atlanta Braves say that. You know, you get a couple of white guys together, and they say that all the time. Cracker, 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 cracker. So?
In fact, there was a minor league team here.
The Atlanta Crackers.
The Atlanta Crackers.
You're damn right. Cracker, cracker. You, cracker. I got a better one. Peckerhead. You peckerhead! What? What's wrong with peckerhead? Is that a bad word, peckerhead? I didn't know that was a bad word. I thought it was just another appellation for white people. Well, you don't know. That's because you don't know any black people. You're so white. You are so white, Kathy. Peckerhead! Cracker!
Syrian.
You're Syrian. Well, you got some Syrian in you, but you're white. You know, you are white. You are a very white girl. Very white girl. But that's all right. That's okay. It's okay. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Item two in the news, this is just today, of another Glenn Beck terrorist who went crazy. This was at a mosque in California. It was vandalized with a brick and hate signs referring to what's going on in New York City. The signs were left at the desecrated mosque stating, quote, no temple for the god of terrorism at Ground Zero, ANB. And then, wake up, America, the enemy is here, ANB. And then, because nobody knows what the hell ANB was, they had another sign that said, America Nationalist Brotherhood. It sounds like one of those groups I watch on lockup on MSNBC every Friday night, right? We are the American Nationalist Brotherhood. Ain't no sisters in here. There's a brotherhood. You punks. You punks. So, a couple of examples of Glenn Beck, Hatred Unbound. He always goes for the white people, the young white people, usually unemployed. Oh, well, Mr. Enright lives in his mama's basement. He's an honor student at a visual arts thingy somewhere, I don't know, and he works for intercultural understanding. That's why he tried to kill the Bangladeshi man. Only it wasn't him. It wasn't me. It was my evil twin. The fat man lies and nobody cares. Which fat man? So many of these right-wing thugs are grossly obese and overweight. This one that I'm referring to is the governor of Mississippi, Haley Baba. You know, Haley Baba. Cracker, cracker, cracker! Haley Baba. Haley Baba. He got a lie here. He does. Here's what happened in Pascagoula, Mississippi. According to WLOX in Pascagoula, Northrop Grumman announced today that it's laying off 292 employees at its Pascagoula shipyard, and more layoffs are expected by year's end. The Erwin Edenson, who is the vice president general manager of Northrop Grumman Shipbuilding / Gulf Coast. So he's the top dog down there, works for Grumman. He said, the cyclical nature of shipbuilding, the sequencing of work within the production phases that determines requirements for different craft and support personnel, as well as the timing of contracts, can result in peaks and valleys in work where the number of employees exceeds the workload requirements. This is currently the case here at our Pascagoula facility. End quote. Now, according to the report from WLOX, additional layoffs of employees from the Pascagoula facility are expected this year. The company expects to reduce another 350 employees in Pascagoula by year's end. There just ain't so much money in the war business anymore. I mean, Jesus, God, we just pulled, what, 116 soldiers out of Iraq or someplace? Anyway, Northrop Grumman is working to provide these employees with information on applying for other opportunities within the company and is assisting the Mississippi Department of Employment Security to provide information on unemployment claims, training, and other services. Governor Haley Barbour, cracker, issued a statement today about the layoff announcement, and he blames Obama. He says, This and other layoffs by our defense contractors is the real-life result of the Obama administration, you know, the Negro up there in the White House, the Obama administration's cuts and delays in national security spending. I worry there will be many more to come in this administration, end quote. You piggish rat bastard, you and your Mississippi gambling operations, and your condos built with Hurricane Katrina money, the condos built near the campus, University of Ole Miss, you pig, you filthy, filthy pig. Cuts in weapon procurement in the Obama administration? You sick old white man, you. Barack Obama just signed off on $700 billion, Haley. Money that won't come over here to Pascagoula, Mississippi, to your gambling casinos there, brother. So once again, the Republicans lie through their teeth. Let's see if one of these shipyard workers goes berserk and does something bad, thanks to Haley.
Gentle into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room. He said, I
10 before the hour. Again, coming up during the third hour, next hour here, we're going to take some phone calls. During the third hour, we're going to talk about Alan Simpson's comments and also the billionaire bankers who are waging a war against Obama, only it's not just against Obama. The Koch brothers are trying to kill everything and everybody on this planet. And, I think once again, it shows the gross stupidity of right-wingers, especially ones that have billions and billions of dollars like these clowns. I guess they think that somehow, some way, they will get a little patch of air that God will make sure they continue to be able to breathe, or a little patch of planet Earth where there's some ozone above them so the sun doesn't fry them into little crispy critters. We'll talk about later tonight. But Alan Simpson, His comment about Social Security what did he say? Hold on a minute. Gosh, so many things to try to remember, right? Social Security is a milk cow with 310 million tits, quote, end quote. And to all the program directors along the line, I'm sorry, I'm just quoting a former United States senator and the co-chair of the President's Deficit Commission, appointed by Barack Obama. So I'm sorry, everybody, if the word T-I-T offends you. I try to say teat, but, you know, Simpson said tit, so I'm just, you know, saying what he said. You know, I get this from Don in Baltimore. Mike, when President Obama appointed Alan Simpson for his President's Deficit Commission, it was the last straw for me voting for Obama again and for me about politics, period. I feel like I wasted a huge part of my life trying to understand what the F is going on in my country. I watched and listened on C-SPAN to a number of this blank Alan Simpson speeches on the Senate floor when he was a member. He is one of the most hateful of the blanks who call themselves conservative Republicans that I've ever listened to in my life. I keep myself very politically informed, and when Mr. Obama allowed or picked this guy for his commission, I knew everything is rigged against the American people and for the SOBing greedy rich blanks in this blanked up country. They all knew the banksters on Wall Street were out of control and were going to crash the blank system. Nobody said or did anything about it. The ruling class were all in on it. They knew the banksters would be bailed out. They knew from our own blank history what happens when the system crashes like it did, and they knew that they can squeeze more and more money out of the people by going after their guaranteed retirement benefits and everything and anything else they want to get their blank dirty hands on. The blank greedy blanks, they have been after Social Security for effing years and more, and now it's all set up, the taking, excuse me, for some more looting. The blank rotten whole bunch of blanks in America's effing ruling class. They know how to play the public for suckers. They play the people for suckers every blank day. I'm so sick of their effing lies and these liars. They are waiting for the November elections to hit the suckers again and to fool the suckers yet once again by telling the suckers we got to cut and gut our Social Security benefits because of the deficit crisis we created, you stupid people. And the American people will buy their lies again. Of course, they're going to blame the deficit crisis on everybody and everything but on themselves, the effing ruling class. W.C. Fields said it best, what America's ruling class, the American people, are all about, and how they continue to wage their class warfare against the working people in America. Every blank day, this drama is played out all across America. Never give a sucker an even break, and never smarten up a chump. The American people are suckers. America is a total effing fraud. Thanks, Don, Baltimore. Whew. Ah. That's like a blog post. Oh, by the way, Kathy has a piece up at Huffington Post about the egg recall. They have it listed as though I wrote it. I haven't written a blog for our website in 10 months, about a good 10 months. Everything that has been posted at Huffington Post, at Op-Ed News, at our website, all of it has been written by Kathy. Now, everybody else credits her, but for some reason, Huffington Post insists on putting my name and my photo above what Kathy has been writing. It's her writing. It's not mine. I like to claim it as mine because all of a sudden, well, after doing it enough here, Kathy has developed into a fairly journeyman style or journeyman writer. She's getting there. She's getting there. Bob Alexander's going to want to edit your book. God, could you write one? All right, we have a break coming here, and then we're going to come back. And if you want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. Is that right, Kathy? 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. So, Ken Melman, who was the head of the Republican National Committee 2005, 2006, 2007, has come out of the closet in an interview with the Atlantic magazine Mark Ambinder. Now, this is the same guy who was the head of the RNC when the Republican Party was pushing anti-gay initiatives and speaking out against marriage equality. Former RNC Chairman Ed Gillespie and Melman's longtime friend called Melman's coming out, quote, significant, end quote, but added that he, Ed Gillespie, remains opposed to gay marriage. And Ed Gillespie will, until he comes out. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy program. Let me just go back to that. Ken Melman, who head of the Republican National Committee during the Bush years, has come out of the gay closet in an interview with Mark Ambinder of The Atlantic. This is what was written by Mark Ambinder. Melman arrived at this conclusion about his identity fairly recently, he said in an interview. He agreed to answer a reporter's questions, he said, because now in private life he wants to become an advocate for gay marriage and anticipated that questions would be asked about his participation in the late September fundraiser for the American Foundation for Equal Rights, the group that supported the legal challenge to Prop 8 in California. Melman said, quote, "It's taken me 43 years to get comfortable with this part of my life. Everybody has their own path to travel, their own journey. And for me, over the past few months, I've told my family, friends, former colleagues, and current colleagues, and they've been wonderful and supportive. The process has been something that's made me a happier and better person. It's something I wish I had done years ago," end quote. But Ken, years ago you weren't focused on that. You were focused on making life miserable for other people just like you. Right? So, it's very nice that you have such good wishes now for yourself and that you've managed to come out to all your friends and colleagues, past and present, and everything's fine, and you're a very happy man now. But, you know, I can't help but wonder, Ken, about all the grief that you caused people when you were the head of the Republican National Committee and strongly, strongly pushed anti-gay initiatives all over the country. You used it to get votes for the pigs that you worked for. I'm glad you're out, Ken. Why didn't, and this line about you just recently arrived at a conclusion? How old are you, 20? How old are you, 14? What do you mean you just recently arrived? Oh, gosh. Like so many folks who spend the better part of their life, especially when they're in positions of power, like this guy was, Ken Melman, the head of the Republican National Committee, big-time operator for the Bush-Cheney murder team. And Melman now is real okay with his sexual orientation and with declaring himself to be himself. But, Ken, do you ever think about the people you put through hell? You ever think about the people who are still experiencing the hell you put them through? Now, I don't know how the gay community, whatever that is, the gay community. It's a town in Oregon. It's called Gay Community Oregon. I don't know how the gay community, which is a series of individual people, how they look at these sorts of comings out. Maybe somebody will email me and tell me how. Here's a guy who spent a good chunk of his adult life demonizing folks who happen to be gay. And using political and, therefore, economic power to make their lives miserable. And now he wants everyone to know how wonderful and supportive everyone's been and how he's a happier and better person, and it's something he wishes he had done years ago. I don't know. I find those kinds of statements just kind of disgusting. But not being a gay man, I don't know. Maybe somebody will write to me and tell me what it means when a Ken Melman, who did so much damage to people who happen to be gay, how you feel when he comes out. Kevin is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing okay. I think they should make Mr. Melman marry Mr. Ripers.
Who? Oh, the guy?
Mr. Ripers.
The guy?
Rent boy guy?
The what?
Rent boy guy.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's like I was calling up to ask if you have ever heard of any connection between these Koch brothers and C Street, where they foster the kind of thinking that says, because we're rich, we're better than everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
And God has a different set of rules for us.
Well, the people of this of this attitude, you find all over in the upper reaches of wealth, especially when that wealth came as a result of raping the earth. You know, you take somebody who's really, really rich, Gates. He didn't get his wealth by punching holes in the earth, by hitting arteries and veins, by polluting everything, by somebody can say, well, you know, Microsoft doesn't share pollution. What do you do with all the stuff, the crap inside a computer? Okay, but he's a software. Bill Gates was a software person. So all I'm saying is when you get people like the Koch brothers who have made their fortune by being rapacious, by always taking from the earth and never, ever, ever giving back, they have the attitude that they are seen as favorable in the sight of God. Of course they do.
You know, this has got to be, we need more people like you enlightening people that we're being ripped off. And
well,
all of these people make their money off the backs of us doing the work.
Yeah, they make it that way, but they also make their money, Kevin, by destroying the nest that we all have to share. I mean, that's and Kevin, thanks. I appreciate your call. Just like British Petroleum, punching holes in the ocean floor, and then when everything goes haywire, oh, well, we promise we'll clean it up. Or Exxon Mobil now, when they hire a drunk who runs his tanker under the rocks and it destroys Prudhoe Bay. No, not Prudhoe Bay. I don't know. So long ago. I really don't care. Don't send me an email. These people
are blessed by their Lord and Savior. They have the right to do anything they want to do, because didn't it say in the Bible you should have dominion over the earth? So dominion over the earth means to go kill it. It means to destroy it. It means to pollute the groundwater, pollute the atmosphere, rip everything out of the earth that you can. And when you have ripped everything out here, go around the planet and rip stuff out. That's just God's directive to the favored few. And you, how do you know if you're one of God's favorite few? If you're ultra wealthy. Because, you know, the prosperity gospel teaches just that. If you're poor, it's because you're a dumb son of a bitch that God doesn't love. God doesn't love you. You know, you get in his way. Jesus doesn't love you either. Ew, ew, ew. Poor people. Ew, ew, ew. Give me the rich. At least that's what these thugs believe. Okay? So, yeah, they operate by a whole different set of rules. They don't have to do what you and I do. They're God's chosen few. The absolute ultra wealthy. Especially if they, like I said, if they make their wealth from ripping the earth. That's what their Lord and Heavenly Master told them to do. We'll be right back. His place in heaven, 'cause he might just die. These election results, these primaries, and so on and so forth. But one thing that does catch my attention about the race in Florida that pitted Alan Simpson, who I think is you know, just a typical Republican thug. He is a he'll do anything to get elected. Bill McCollum. He's a former state attorney general in Florida and former congressman. And he got beat fairly badly by a teabagger type named Rick Scott. And in Florida, this is for the Florida governor's race. Now, he still has to go up against the Democrat, but this is what gets me. This guy Scott, Rick Scott, he was the CEO of a hospital corporation that recently paid a record $1.7 billion fine to settle criminal charges of Medicaid and Medicare fraud. Now, this is in Florida, right? How many voters who voted for this rat bastard, use Medicare or Medicaid for that matter, but especially Medicare? During one of the debates earlier this month, McCollum said, quote, "The way you ran Columbia HCA, God help us if you run the state like you ran that," end quote. That's the hospital chain that Rick Scott built into the largest healthcare concern in the world in the 1990s. And his company had to pay a $1.7 billion fine because of the charges of Medicaid and Medicare fraud. And in the The Miami Herald article says Scott, who was ousted by his board amid the fraud allegations in 1997, said he wasn't aware of any criminal activity, and he was never charged. On the campaign trail, he said, well, we could have done things better. And this guy also is ultra wealthy. He spent $35 million of his own money to get the governor's office in Florida. Now, why would he do that? What does the governor's office pay? What does it pay to be governor of Florida? $150,000? $200,000? He spends $35 million. McCollum's campaign turned up the heat last week on Scott, on Rick Scott. The McCollum campaign forwarded to state law enforcement officials a doctor's complaint about billing practices at a chain of urgent care clinics that Rick Scott co-founded, and pressuring him to make public a sealed video deposition he gave in a lawsuit against the clinics. McCollum wanted that deposition, that video deposition, released. Rick Scott flatly refused to release the deposition and called a news conference and said that McCollum was the new, or was the Tanya Harding of Florida politics. A reference to the Olympic figure skater who played a role in the attack on Nancy Kerrigan 1,000 years ago. So this is a guy who wins the Republican nomination for governor of Florida. Of course. Of course. A guy who's the company he founded. Now he says, well, I didn't know anything about it. I was just the founder and the CEO. And I didn't know anything about this. Fraud? Oh, where? To the tune of $1.7 billion, the biggest fine ever levied against a capitalist pig for defrauding people on Medicare. So what happens? The people of Florida vote for him. Joyce Waltz, a 66-year-old retiree who lives in Pembroke Pines, Florida, is typical of voters who were drawn to Rick Scott. She said, quote, as a concerned citizen of this country, I am tired of listening to political rhetoric. I was very impressed that we have a candidate here who is very pro-business, who has big business experience, and is trying to run Florida around in a different direction from the normal political rhetoric. You crazy old bat. You're 66. You get some kind of Medicare, I would assume. Never mind. This is what happens when you can spend $35 million to get the nomination. Republican Party, of course it's a Republican, of course. I mean, what does anybody expect? But then when you hear voters say, well, I voted for him because, you know, he's a true American. If the woman only knew how right she was, it's not that he's a true American, it's that he's a true capitalist. And capitalism says, take everything. Dig holes in the earth, screw people over, do anything. Get the money. If people die, if people suffer, if countries collapse, if the economy goes south, if you wind up destroying the air to the point where it's unbreathable, if you increase global warming, so what? I'm a Republican, and God loves me, and I spent $35 million to get this nomination, and by God, I deserve it, because I'm a Republican, and God loves me, and I have $35 million I spent. You know how much money I really have? A lot more than that. So I deserve it, because I'm a Republican, and God loves me. And that little old lady, bless her heart. I'll get her eventually. You can bet on that.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
before the hour. Steve in L.A. has answered my question about how does, and Steve only speaks for Steve, and I understand that, but I was just looking for somebody who might be able to comment on someone who did so much damage while he was in a position of political power, like Ed Melman did, coming out as a gay man. Now that he's out of power and can no longer hurt people, Stephen L.A. writes under the subject line, traitor. To answer your question regarding Melman's coming out, I can only speak for this gay male. But it's all too little, too late. It's nice that Mr. Melman is now in touch with his true self. But please, don't claim that you didn't know you were attracted to other men when you were the head of the RNC, Mr. Melman. You knew, but you continued to spew homophobic hate to the masses. Now that you have no power, no title, and little influence, you want to be my spokesperson? My advocate? For gay marriage? Methinks not. Judas. Steve in L.A. Thank you, Steve. I kind of thought that would be a reaction. I don't know if that's a typical reaction, but were I a gay male and were in a position of watching these people who are traitors, who spend so much time making my life, were I a gay male, miserable, and making the life of my partner miserable, or my children, or my parents, or my family miserable with their hate rhetoric, and then they came out? I probably would not be forgiving. I'm sorry. The Lord Jesus says to be forgiving. Well, no, that's the old Lord Jesus. The new one says machine gun the bastards, if you listen to Sarah Palin and the rest of these thugs. Yes.
I was going to say, I wonder if your audience would forgive you if you came out and decided that you were all of a sudden a big, fan of the right wing in this country. And
boy, you know, if I did, I could
make a lot more money.
I could start, well, more money. I could start making money.
And also, I just have to ask, did anybody think Melman was fooling anybody? I mean, didn't you? You used to talk about, you know, the self-hating gay man. I mean, did anybody ever think straight?
It's difficult. It really is. You thought I was gay. You did.
Well, come on.
Okay, but now wait. My point is, it's very difficult. You know, everybody talks about gaydar. Okay, if you have some, what's the word, flamboyant man, gay man, like our friend RuPaul. You know, I met RuPaul when he was 17. And he came on a little cable television show that we did, a public access television show that we did here in Atlanta. This was 1,000 years ago. And I don't know. He had a group called RuPaul and the U-Hauls. And it was RuPaul. Even back then, he was tall and skinny. And he had two women who were very large, hence the name RuPaul and the U-Hauls. And they used to do an act that was pretty good. I mean, they were singers, and they did this act. And the first night when he came by the studio, and James Bond was the producer of that show, after he left, James said, "Hey, Malloy, you think he's gay?" I said, "Well, James, who knows? Who knows who is what?" James said, "Well, I think he's gay." I said, "Well, okay. I mean, so what? He's a hell of an entertainer." This is back when RuPaul was 17. I said, "He's a hell of an entertainer." I said, "Are you going to make him a regular guest on this?" We had a stupid little public access show that was probably seen by the same 38 people who listened to this talk show. And James said, yeah, I like his act too. So his act was launched right here in Atlanta, of course, on the, it was called the American Music Show. Now, if you want to, I'm sure you can Google that, The American Music Show. I've never Googled it. I don't know what will come up. So, to answer the question, didn't you know he was gay, Ed Melman, Who knows? I mean, who knows who's what? And that's why I said for the longest time, because of the way I talked, some of the things I said, you thought I was a gay man.
I was going to say, let's please explain this to the audience. I didn't think you were gay after I met you or after I saw you.
I never met Ed Melman.
Well, you saw him. Come on.
Right.
Right.
But you used to listen to me on the radio back in the day when you were a stalker.
Exactly. And your number one fan. But at least I never tried to hobble you or beat you over the head with a typewriter.
But the fact remains that you thought I was gay.
Well, that's your fault.
Well, of course. Well, of course it's my fault.
You were always advocating for gay rights in Atlanta. Hey, okay, now that's one. You did the whole pansy truck thing, you know, that got you fired from WSB the first time.
Right.
And you kept going on the air talking about your partner. My partner and I. And all you were trying to do.
That's because I was living with the woman.
A woman. Right. But you didn't say, my girlfriend. Or my lady friend, or my hot chick.
Well, we've been living together for 2 years.
What?
You don't call
my partner. My partner and I went to see the Indigo Girls at Eddie's Attic the other night.
That's a gay word, partner.
Well, at the time, it was certainly considered, quote, code for my same-sex lover. You know, all you had to do is say, my same-sex partner and I were at a very gay-friendly restaurant in Midtown Atlanta that you would name, or the Outright Bookstore, or the Flying Biscuit Cafe, or any number of other gay-friendly establishments in Atlanta back in the 80s. And, yeah, I thought you were gay. And I thought, damn.
Well, a lot of my
friends... Damn, if he just wasn't gay.
Okay, I know. A lot of my friends happen to be gay men, lesbian women. Always have been. I don't know why. Because I'm gay? No, I tried it back when I was 17. I had an experience with an older guy. I think he was like 27. And it just wasn't all that appealing. And that's when I knew I was like a senior in high school, and when I had my little gay experience, and it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything that I thought was all that much fun. I had recently discovered girls.
Our poor kid, I'm telling you. Molly's just doomed.
No, Molly is at a great advantage because I will be able to sit down and talk with her, not from some half-assed theoretical point of view.
Between the stories you tell her at night about the Galumphers and the monsters with the dripping fangs and, the ones named Chaney.
I tell her stories about fairies, thanks to Bridget and John. I tell her stories about fairies. But
creatures that eat fairies.
Well, those creatures are always defeated. The fairies all get together and beat the hell out of those monsters and kill them, you see. Trying to teach Molly stuff. But as far as gay folk are considered, or people who happen to be gay, I don't care. I don't give a damn. I don't care that much for political correct speech. So many of my friends over the course of my lifetime have been gay. And so many of my friends over the course of my lifetime have been not white, straight males. They have been other permutations and combinations and genders and mixed metaphors and so on and so forth. And I think that's one of the reasons I don't have the only group that I have a problem with are right wingers. That's it. Because they are humorless. They are sons of bitches. They are anti-life. They don't know how to have fun. They're just pigs. They're just useless pigs. That's
well, maybe
it.
Melman will be more fun now.
Well,
maybe he'll loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, after all the damage he did, sure. Oh, let's go out and have fun now that I'm out. You know, that now that I've done all this damage, now that I've betrayed everybody else who happens to be gay, oh, now I'm ready to have fun.
Well, he had a hookup with Minya Matters, you know, the other conversion on the road to Damascus, blinded by the right.
Oh.
Help me out here. the other one.
Oh, God, what's his name?
That one.
Yeah, I had him on the air one time in Chicago.
Yeah.
He was. He wrote Confessions of a Right-Wing Hitman for Esquire magazine.
And Blinded by the Right.
And Blinded by the Right was the book.
He founded Media Matters.
Yeah. What? God. Why am I drawing a blank on his
name?
Anyway,
Melman ought to. You know, they ought to hook up.
For what?
Well, so that Melman can get some pointers on how to go forth and do good and be absolved from all of his many sins.
Okay. Hook up has a different meaning now.
Oh, you gay men.
All right, we're going to take a break. I don't know what that discussion was all about, but we're going to... Oh, that's right. Steve in L.A. triggered that big discussion. Gaydar. No, a lot of straight people think they do have gaydar. Okay. Far be it from me.
I think you were being deliberately ambiguous on the air back then.
Well, David Brock.
David Brock!
The Media Matters guy.
Thank you for the email.
Let's take a break. Reg came through for me with, and who else came through? Boof de Pooh. We'll be right back.
It's Michael Moore.
10 before the hour. Let me share this with you very quickly. It's about labor struggles in Madison, Wisconsin. It's from Tim. Tim writes, Mike, I'm a longtime listener. I'm an employee with City of Madison Parking Utility and an AFSCME Council 40 Local 60 member. In the great progressive city of Madison, many municipal public employees are facing privatizing or outsourcing in the upcoming city budgets. We are actively fighting to justify ourselves as valuable assets to the public. If you could please mention our website, SaveMadisonJobs.com, or link it to your website, which I'll do, Tim. It would go a long way to secure employment for many. We have a link to our petition on the site. I'm a young union organizer who understands the class struggle we are in. I know I might be a dreamer, but I believe organizing labor, the poor, the so-called illegal, the wage slaves, and so on is our only hope. If you can't mention the site, I understand. Well, of course I can. Please visit it yourself. Don't give up yet. We are trying. Thank you for your voice, Tim. Yeah, it is SaveMadisonJobs.com. Madison, Wisconsin. SaveMadisonJobs.com. So go there, okay? Please, just go to the site. See what Tim's talking about. We'll link it to our website, Tim, and later on tonight when we're off the air, I'll check it out. Gerald is in Detroit listening on XM. Hey, Gerald.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, do you want to talk or what?
Yeah, I have this word I thought you could use in place of or in addition to cracker when you're talking about white people.
Okay.
It's a Sioux Indian word. Hey, it's a Wasichu.
Wafichu?
Wasichu.
Okay.
And it's not so much a reference to skin color as the tendency of white people to take everything that was good they could get their hands on.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I kind of like cracker, I guess, because, you know, I've spent 40 years in the South now, and I'm just so used to hearing it. B, all my life I've had black friends who, at various times, cracker was in vogue. I always like cracker. There's something about that word, you know, salty, brittle, square. Eh, you know. All right. Thanks, Gerald. I appreciate it. James in El Sobrante, California. Welcome to the program, James.
Good evening. Thank you. Well, I was riding the BART today. I looked over at the headline of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
I was reading across from me. That investors, meaning, of course, people with millions of billions of dollars, getting jittery in the stock market, are moving their money into something relatively, quote-unquote, safe, which would be government debt, the debt of the United States, which is certainly interesting. So they figure that if they can't make money by, taking all the profits and the wealth and so forth that, working people create through their activity, they can always light the fire a little bit under our butts and make us work a little harder to pay off the debt, pay off the money that they lent themselves. I mean, that they lent themselves.
Right.
We have to,
That we have to, right. It's corporate welfare and payback socialism.
Can I say one other thing? Just
sure.
Since we're talking about that stuff about Ken Millman.
Sure.
It's got to be obvious here. This is pure opportunism. That, I mean, wasn't it like not too long ago that Michael Steele said he came out as a lesbian or something like that? This is their way of getting to the urban voters, obviously. This is they think of that as a stronghold, the Democratic Party, and this is their way to get votes from those people.
You think?
That's probably totally obvious, right?
Well, I don't know. You may be right, James. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Very quickly, do I have time? Regarding fairies beating the hell out of monsters, which is some of the stories I tell Molly, Captain Mary writes, in one of Terry Pratchett's Discworld books, Hogfather, Susan Death is doing a stint as a governess. At the request of one of the kids, she takes a poker and beats the hell out of a monster in the cellar. This occurs during a Hog's Watch night party when the adults are busy eating, drinking, and getting stupid, while the kids are waiting for the Hogfather. Some adults see her sneaking with her poker to the cellar and follow her. They wait as noises and screams shoot up the stairs. Then all agree that it's excellent psychology to use on the kids. Susan and the kids, no different. So does the monster. The Hogfather is a lot like Santa Claus. There's a song about him. You know it's a song for kids because it starts with, "You better watch out." Cat Mary, who believes in the Hogfather in Memphis. That's a new one. Hogfather? I'm not familiar with that one. Do you know about that one?
No, but I'm sure Molly will be hearing about it shortly.
And we'll have to go to Outright Bookstore and see if, or Charis Books.
And just tell her more stories about beating things up with a stick.
Well,
that's what she needs.
She's going to need to be able to do that when
boys start calling.
When boys start coming around and asking her for a date. That's right. I want her to understand what step two is. Step one is, "Hi, Molly, would you like to go get an ice cream?" And I want her to be able to handle step two. All right, we're out of time. For this hour, we shall return in, about 11 minutes? Is this break that long? Oh, my God. Well, you've got time to go fix supper, fix yourself a cheese sandwich. When we come back, the billionaire brothers who are waging a war against Obama. This is the Koch brothers. And Alan Simpson. And whatever else we can cram in, all right? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. As promised, I want to get to this piece written by Jane Meyer that, like I mentioned, it's in the current issue of MotherJones.com. You can get to it online. It's a lengthy article. I just have a part of it here, the beginning, and it's about the Koch brothers. Remember, we have talked about the Koch brothers, David Koch, and who's the other one? Charles? Yeah, these are the guys who have funded the Tea Party. These are the guys who have relentlessly attacked any Democrat, any liberal, any progressive cause that they can get their hands on. They're billionaires. They are in the pipeline business and the oil business and so on and so forth, as most of these criminals are. They have spent untold amounts of money defeating people politically who would try to bring some sanity to the governance of this country, whether it is involving stem cell research or global climate change, whatever the issue. Anytime you hear anything negative about a socially progressive issue, you can usually bet your bottom dollar that the Koch brothers have either funded it completely, surreptitiously or openly, or they're somehow behind it. These are real killers where it concerns the spirit. They want to kill the spirit of America. They want everybody to just give up. The Koch brothers are probably the two worst examples of hideous citizenship that you can imagine in the United States. I mean, these are really, 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 really bad people, okay? But they cover their asses a couple of ways. First of all, they call themselves libertarians. Ooh, we know what libertarians are, right? Secondly, they make heavy-duty contributions to cultural aspects of the country, both in their home state, in New York State, wherever they can. They have billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. So they make these contributions that are tax deductible, of course, but that benefit the top 0.1%, for the most part, of the American population, of which they are leading lights. And I want Jane Meyer, who is one of the better, if not one of the best, I should say, investigative reporters out there. She is in that upper echelon rank of investigative reporters, like Robert Perry, like you know who they are. Seymour Hersh, she does an excellent job. I just so strongly recommend that you go to NewYorker.com and read this in its entirety. But it's under the title, The Billionaire Brothers Who Are Waging a War Against Obama. And they are. That's not hyperbole. They are. They're waging a war against Obama, but they're also waging a war against the United States. They're waging a war against the world. They're waging a war against anything they can put their filthy, grubby hands on. And they have the money to do it. Now, why they do this, you know, I mentioned the other night, do these people really think, once they have spent so much of their money to defeat science, to defeat the efforts that are made to keep the planet livable, do these dumb bastards really think that they will be able to go someplace to live where there is oxygen, where there is clean water, where there is soil that produces crops? What do these people think about? Now, they're both old, so they probably figure, well, we're going to die anyway. We don't give a damn. But surely they have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I don't understand why, when people have leveraged the capitalistic system to a degree that these thugs have, to the point where they become billionaires. You know, they haven't invented anything. They haven't grown anything. They haven't. All they've done is rape the Earth's resources. This is what people like this do. But it's a puzzle to me. It really is. It's a puzzle to me. When people get to this level of wealth, there's no way, if these thugs started spending $1 million a day, they could not spend all of their wealth before they died. Probably their children and grandchildren, at that $1 million a day rate, couldn't spend all the money that these two monsters have accumulated. But the thought that intrigues me. When people get to this level of wealth, why don't they use that wealth for the betterment of their species? Now, by species, I mean humans. Why? Why do they, you know, they'll refurbish the American Museum of Natural History in New York. For example, which one is it? It's one of these Koch thugs. I think it's David. The dinosaur wing of the Museum of Natural History is named for him. How about that? And now, he made this donation in 2008. Metropolitan Museum of Art, he pledged $10 million for the renovation. I don't get these guys. They contribute money for cultural venues or what have you that most people in this country will never experience. But when you get to the point where your net wealth is in the tens of billions of dollars, when you get to that level, why don't you have the common decency to do something for the planet, for the family of man? Ooh, I'm sorry, family of man? Ooh, well, that sounds real communistic or socialist. Family of man? Why be greedy, sweaty bastards like these two who just only think about how to pervert the system, how to pervert whether it's our social system, our political system? And again, I've said before that to people of this mindset, the perversion is usually sport. They do it because they can, and they do it for fun. Jane Meyer, the lead to her article, takes place at a black tie event at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. It was the 70th annual Spring Gala of the American Ballet Theater. And she starts out by talking about how these guys have become the city's most prominent philanthropist, the Koch brothers. And it goes on and on and on. But here's what she says a little bit further than that. On May 17th, this event occurred, and all these wealthy people were there, all the prominent Americans, you might say. But as Jane Meyer points out, one dignity was conspicuously absent from the gala. The event's third honorary co-chair, the Koch brothers were the two other two. The third honorary co-chair was Michelle Obama. Her office said that a scheduling conflict had prevented her from attending, which is a polite way of saying she wouldn't appear on the stage with these grubby sons of bitches if her life depended on it. Not the least reason, because the Koch family has repeatedly funded stealth attacks on the federal government and on the Obama administration in particular. So why show up and, you know, sit with these guys, right? Here's Michelle Obama, who has more dignity and class and understanding of the human condition in her one of her pinkies than these two overfed monsters have in their entire bodies, in their entire families. I mean, this is a really sick conglomeration, Koch Industries and the Koch family. Wealth of this sort is don't know, it's an obscenity. It's an obscenity, especially the way they use it. And they can't hide behind, well, we fund all these cultural things. Yeah, you also fund, I think the Koch brothers were behind, their money was behind the attack on John Kerry. I mean, name something that is evil and perpetrated against the American people, the lies, the deception. If it's not the Fox television channel and their vermin, it's the Koch family and their vermin. More on this when we come back. Stay with us.
Well, this is evident, yeah, in the American way.
free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Well, we are focused, actually, on the segment on two of the biggest, most destructive flying monkeys in American society. I'm talking about the Koch brothers, David and Charles. K-O-C-H. If you want to look them up, go ahead. Anyway, Jane Mayer, writing New Yorker magazine, and you can access this article at newyorker.com, and you need to read this, The Billionaire Brothers Who Are Waging a War Against Obama. It's a lengthy article. And Ms. Mayer writes, with his brother Charles, who is 74, David Koch, who is 70, owns virtually all of Koch Industries, a conglomerate headquartered in Wichita, Kansas, whose annual revenues are estimated to be $100 billion. The company has grown spectacularly since their father died in 1967 and the brothers took charge. The Kochs operate oil refineries in Alaska, Texas, Minnesota, control some 4,000 miles of pipeline. Koch Industries owns Brawny paper towels, Dixie cups, Georgia-Pacific lumber, Stainmaster carpet, and Lycra, among other products. Forbes magazine ranks it as the second largest private company in the country after Cargill. And its consistent profitability has made David and Charles Koch among the richest men in America. Their combined fortune of $35 billion is exceeded only by those of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. The Kochs, as Jane Mayer writes, are longtime libertarians, of course, who believe in drastically lower personal and corporate taxes. Gee, I wonder why. Minimal social services for the needy. Why, of course. And much less oversight of industry. Let's get rid of the regulations, you know, especially environmental regulation. See what I mean? These are poisonous, murderous swine. As Jane Mayer writes, these views dovetail with the brothers' corporate interests. In a study released this spring, the University of Massachusetts at Amherst Political Economy Research Institute named Koch Industries one of the top 10 air polluters in the United States. And Greenpeace issued a report identifying the company as, quote, a kingpin of climate science denial, end quote. And again, let me digress from Jane Mayer's article in The New Yorker. What do these swine think they are going to do for air when the time comes that the planet is an environmental disaster? And there's no way to exist because the planet has heated up or the oxygen level has gone down or the CO2 level has gone up. Where do crap heads like these two think they are going to get clean air, clean water, clean soil? I mean, unless they just figure they'll be dead and they don't care. Their legacy is poison, death, and destruction. This is what they're leaving. This is what they're leaving behind. The Greenpeace report showed that from 2005 to 2008, the Koch brothers vastly outdid ExxonMobil in giving money to organizations fighting legislation related to climate change, underwriting a huge network of foundations, think tanks, and political front groups. Indeed, the brothers have funded opposition campaigns against so many Obama administration policies, from health care reform to the economic stimulus program, that in political circles, their ideological network is known as the Kochtopus. I mean, just evil, evil people. Evil. Nothing that these two scumsuckers do with their billions benefits human beings or the planet. How do you get to that point where your greed and your self-referential view of everything on Earth has become such a corrupting influence that you can do this? How do you get to that point? How do two wealthy pigs like these two get to the point where not only are they capable of prostituting their own humanity, they deny the humanity of everybody else on Earth? How do they do this? How do you reach that kind of moral vacuum? I mean, these people are not even amoral. They wouldn't be able to define the term morality. What is morality to them? Refurbishing the Metropolitan Opera House, I guess. Is that it? It's astonishing. In a statement, Koch Industries said that the Greenpeace report, quote, distorts the environmental record of our companies, end quote. Well, of course it does. The Greenpeace report was far too gentle on swine like these two. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
If you are...
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Michael Moore.
25 before the hour, we're talking about Jane Mayer's... a lengthy article in the current issue of the New Yorker. You can access the article by going to newyorker.com. The article is titled, The Billionaire Brothers Who Are Waging a War Against Obama. It's not just against Obama, as Mayer makes clear in her article. These two thugs are waging a war against their fellow human beings. And there's no mercy. There's none shown. And they use their billions and billions of dollars to... hide behind so they don't have to ask for mercy either. Anyway, Greenpeace, other organizations that keep watch on people who are destroying the country, destroying the planet, Greenpeace has identified this company, Koch Industries, as a kingpin of climate science denial, among other things. That sounds so mild. Again, read Jane Mayer's article. Anyway, Koch Industries said that the Greenpeace report distorts the environmental record of their company. And David Koch, who in a recent admiring article, about him in New York magazine, not the New Yorker, but New York magazine, he protested that what he calls the radical press, the radical press, Jesus, has turned his family into, his words, whipping boys. Don't you wish, huh, David? And had exaggerated the company's influence on American politics. No, you can't do that. Charles Lewis, the founder of the Center for Public Integrity, a nonpartisan watchdog group, said, quote, the Kochs are on a whole different level. There's no one else who has spent this much money. The sheer dimension of it is what sets them apart. They have a pattern of lawbreaking, political manipulation, and obfuscation. I've been in Washington since Watergate, and I've never seen anything like these two. They are the Standard Oil of our times, end quote. Now, you have to be above a certain age to understand what that means, but you can Google it and find out. Anyway, as Mayer goes on, a few weeks after the Lincoln Center gala that she begins her article with, the advocacy wing of something called Americans for Prosperity Foundation. That's an organization that David Koch started in 2004. Now, you know whose prosperity he's talking about. He's talking about all Americans. He's talking about his own prosperity. Americans for our prosperity. Anyway, they held a different kind of gathering. Over the July 4th weekend just passed, a summit called Texas Defending the American Dream. Texas Defending the American Dream. It took place in a hotel ballroom in Austin, Texas. David Koch did not attend the summit, and his name was not even in evidence. But guess whose money was behind it? And on this occasion, the audience was roused not by a dance performance, like at the American Ballet, but by a series of speakers denouncing President Barack Obama. Peggy Venable, the organizer of the summit, warned that Obama administration officials, quote, have a socialist vision for this country, end quote. They always use that, don't they? Muslim socialist. Oh, my God. 500 people attended the summit, which served in part as a training session for teabag activists in Texas. An advertisement cast the event as a populist uprising against vested corporate power. Now, the audacity of that. In other words, the balls of the Koch brothers. They organized something that highlights the a populist uprising against vested corporate power. They are the vested corporate power. If ever there were a true populist uprising in this country, these two would be the first two paraded before a jury of their, not their peers, because their peers would find them, what, guilty? What are you talking about? They're just raping the environment. What's wrong with that? They would be taken before a court of law. They would be the first two to go into the dock. Anyway, the advertisement about this event said, quote, today the voices of average Americans are being drowned out by lobbyists and special interests. Oh, my God. That makes you laugh, except for the fact that it's poisonously true. But these are the people who are doing it. The advertisement went on to say, but you can do something about it. What? Very simply, you become slaves to the Koch boys. That's all they want. You know, they don't want that much. They just want everything. Everything. So how do you help the Koch boys get everything? You become their slaves. That's all you have to do. The pitch made no mention of the fact that the corporate funders of this were the Koch boys. David Axelrod, Obama's senior advisor, who expresses official frustration that the sponsors of these filthy neo-Nazi events are unidentifiable to the American public. Axelrod said, quote, what they don't say is that, in part, this is a grassroots citizens movement, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, brought to you by a bunch of oil billionaires, end quote. God. You can read the rest of it, but I strongly recommend that you do this particular article by Jane Mayer, anything by Jane Mayer, frankly. But go to NewYorker.com and check it out. The billionaire brothers who are waging a war against Obama. The only thing a little bit shaky, as far as I'm concerned, about the title of Jane Mayer's piece is waging war against Obama. The Koch brothers are waging war against every other human being on Earth, all 6 billion of us. These are potential mass killers on a scale impossible in previous human history. But these guys have the power. They have the power. They have the money. And they have, for some reason, apparently the desire to turn this planet into a cinder. And again, I don't get this. They're in their early 70s with the kind of health care and that they can afford and the fact that they could purchase human organs as theirs fail. All they need, say, is give me a heart, give me a liver, give me a lung. You know, and it's, oh, yes, sir, it's right there. Given the fact that they can do this, And barring some sort of disease that starts eating at them physically, they'll probably be around for another 15 years. And we don't have 15 years, you see, to continue to slog along pretending like nothing is wrong with the environment of this planet. We don't have 15 years. The contempt and disgust that I feel for people like this. And the teabaggers love them. Oh, someday I'm going to be a David Koch. No, you're not. Not ever. What you are going to be is a slave to David Koch and his family. And then you will become a fatality of the Koch family. A statistic. One more American, one more human, one more person that dies because of the policies these two monsters fund and put out there as fact when they are not fact. The policies they fund are designed to cloud the air with lies, distortions, half-truths. Now, when you figure that the country is caught between the Koch boys and their vermin, and Murdoch and his vermin, and Prince Awalid and his vermin, and the Christian fundamentalists and their vermin, what's the guy to do? What do you do? Do you give up? Or do you say, no, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait for the proper moment, and then I'm going to do it. I don't know. One other thing here. Well, I've got to do the... Alan Simpson thing. And he sent an email to the executive director of the National Older Women's League yesterday morning. Alan Simpson, of course, is one of the people tasked with helping to reform Social Security. And who appointed him? Barack Obama. Okay? Alan Simpson, of course, wants to destroy Social Security, end it, in the same way that the Koch brothers want to end human life, or all life on this planet. All right, let me tell you what Alan Simpson said when we come back. And we've waited till the almost the end of the program here because he uses the T word. And if you're offended by the T word, then just go do something else and come back later. We're all criminals waiting to be They say, don't step off the sidewalk and don't cross over the line. But we'll serve time at night when the lights begin to dim and the smoke seems to clear. You can say what you want. Barack Obama appointed to the Social Security Mend It, Don't End It Commission. He believes that Social Security is, his words, quote, like a milk cow with 310 million tits, end quote. That's according to an email he sent to the executive director of the National Older Women's League. Oh, my God. Simpson, of course, co-chairs the Deficit Commission, which is considering various ways to cut Social Security benefits. Hmm? Simpson's email, which the Older Women's League chief woman named Ashley Carson released publicly, was sent in response to a blog post that Ms. Carson wrote at Huffington Post back in April. Ms. Carson criticized Alan Simpson for repeatedly describing his Social Security opponents as, quote, Pink Panthers, end quote. Arguing, Ms. Carson argued that the description had sexist connotations. His email is peppered with exclamation points and condescension. At one point, he urges Ashley Carson to read a certain graph, quote, which I hope you're able to discern if you're any good at reading graphs, end quote. Simpson, Alan Simpson concludes by implying that leading a major organization dedicated to the interests of middle-aged and elderly women is not, his words, honest work. It's not honest work. Son of a bitch. He writes, quote, if you have some better suggestions about how to stabilize Social Security instead of just babbling into the vapors, let me know. He goes on, and yes, I've made some pretty smart cracks about people on Social Security who milk it to the last degree. You know them, too. It's the same with any system in America. We've reached a point now where it's like a milk cow with 310 million tits. Call when you get honest work. That's Alan Simpson, who is himself an old fart. It's unclear from Simpson's email if he means Social Security is the milk cow or if he's referring to America in general. I don't think he knows the difference. Why would Obama appoint some half-senile old fart like this who's every time he opens his mouth, you expect bats and spiders to come out, right? A Simpson assistant responded to a Huffington Post email saying that former Senator Simpson was traveling and unable to comment immediately. Sorry. The senator is, Mr. Simpson is scaling the Grand Tetons or something. He's rafting down the Amazon. He's hiking the Appalachian Trail. Oh, no, wait. Governor Sanford used that one. Anyway. Simpson's tirade continues a pattern of erratic behavior that threatens to undermine the commission's work. In June, he unleashed a stream of error-riddled invective on a Social Security advocate wielding a camera outside a closed-door commission meeting. Remember that? Remember that? There was some language used in that that I probably can't use on the program without offending somebody. Anyway, Paul Krugman, then writing in the New York Times, concluded that Simpson's function and, in fact, his actions are killing this commission. And, of course, Krugman thinks that's a good idea. So do I. You know, once again, Barack Obama has shown that he is captive of or dedicated to the corporate interests in this country who want to dismantle the remaining little patchwork of social safety net quilt that still exists 70 years after Roosevelt put it together. And I don't get Barack Obama. I don't get any of these people. They are destructive. They are mean. They're hateful. The Older Women's League is now calling on Mr. Simpson to resign. Well, you don't ask him. You don't ask him to resign. He loves that kind of stuff. Probably sits around, you old bitches. You old bitches. Older Women's League. OWL. That says owl. You're a bunch of owls, aren't you? Huh? No, no. The Older Women's League ought to go to the person who appointed Alan Simpson. That would be President Obama. And ask President Obama to get rid of him. But Obama would just probably say something to the effect, well, now he's a former respected senator from Wyoming, and actually he's doing God's work because, or Allah's work, you know, because I am really a closet Muslim from Kenya, as a matter of fact. But, ladies, he's doing the work that I have asked him to do, and that is to satisfy my corporate sponsors. You have to remember that Goldman Sachs' largest contribution in the 2008 election cycle went to Barack Obama. So, you know, for Barack Obama to claim, and he never has, that he is of or for the people would be ridiculous. He's never claimed that. The teabag halfwits, the ones funded and sponsored by the Koch brothers, the teabag halfwits are the ones that tell you that Barack Obama is a socialist or a, oh my God, oh, never mind. It gets so confusing, doesn't it? Listen, we're finished for tonight. Here comes the theme music. Da-da! Thank you. Oh, time to go to bed. Time to go to sleep. Perchance to dream. Oh, never mind. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.